Welcome back, mobile gamers of the interwebs, to the 9th episode of the Tiny Nimble podcast, a show focused on mobile gaming hosted by me, Nimble Thor, and my partner in crime, Tiny Little Games. Now today we're going to spend some time not only talking about the latest releases and news, but also what drives us to play mobile games, and maybe most importantly, why villains in Hollywood movies are not allowed to use iPhones anymore, apparently, as well as which upcoming games we're most excited about these days. But before we get too deep into the actual topics of this episode, if you are listening on a platform where you can leave a like, subscribe, or in some way rate this show, you're more than welcome to do so, by the way. YouTube, Spotify, and iTunes, they all look at engagement rates when they have to decide which content to feature. So if you're enjoying the show and you want to help support and grow the podcast, that is one of the very best ways to do so, and we really appreciate the help. Now, as always, we're going to kick things off with our righteous recommendations of the month. And Tiny, do you want to go ahead with your righteous recommendation, your one mobile game that you want to highlight this episode?
So, this past month, I've been playing one mobile game and one mobile game only, and to everyone's surprise and to my own surprise, I am actually playing a game called Golden Tee Arcade. Actually, it's called Golden Tee Golf, I think, or something along those lines. If anybody remembers going into the arcade, the arcades back in the day when you were younger, they had this arcade machine that said Golden Tee Golf, and you walked up to it, and it was just, you were playing golf, and you had this little round ball in the arcade that you would like swipe the ball, right? You would swipe the ball in the direction you want to hit it. You would swipe it slow if you're going to be putting. And for some reason, I'm not even a golf fan, but as a kid, I used to play the heck out of this game at the arcade, and now they have it on your phone. Of course, you don't have a ball to swipe or hit or anything like that. But basically, yes, you just slide your finger to hit the ball, and then you putt and you do all the stuff, and you pick which golf club you're going to use. And for some reason, I have been addicted to this game. I suck at it. I'm not good. I'm always hitting the ball off in the trees, or I'm always doing all these things, getting bogeys and flogeys and whatever those golf terms I don't know. But it's fun. It's a good little casual game. It's a good little time waster. If you're a fan of golf, you'll probably like it. If you're not really a fan of golf, but you want to learn the game, or you just want to have a little fun with it and try to like get better at it, it's a great game for that. It's called Golden Tee Golf. They actually had it on the original PlayStation. Back in the day, they had a version of it, and I'm curious if, it's been so long since I've played that one, I'm curious if this one kind of resembles that one, since it doesn't have the arcade machine or anything like that. And of course, it has the usual monetization, where you can, like, buy golf bags that have, like, certain special golf balls and certain,
See, I was about to ask about that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Is it the same game, by the way? Is it the same game as from the arcades back in the day?
So, I thought it was. That's what was my biggest thing. I'm like, oh, this is the same exact game. It's not the same game. The graphics are different. It's basically a revamped graphics. I want to say the way it plays is a little bit different. I don't even know if it's the same company, or if maybe the company maybe bought the rights to the game or something along those lines. But I will say it has a really, even though it started as an arcade game or from an arcade cabinet, and it's kind of arcade-ish, it does have a lot more realism to it than you would think. More so than a lot of golf games on the App Store, honestly. A lot of golf games on the App Store are really arcade-y or something along those lines.
Yeah, see, that's what I like.
Yeah,
that's what I like.
This one actually has a little bit of realism to it. You have to really like, depending on where you swipe your finger, that's the direction the ball is going. If it's too hard or too soft, you're not going to hit it in the right spot. So I actually like the realism about it. But yes, Golden Tee Golf. Any golfers out there,
that's not a bad one.
Give it a go.
Yeah, maybe I should go play that one. I've played Golf Battle and Golf Blitz.
Okay,
I
played Golf Blitz.
To be really great games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Golf Blitz, I think that's a fun game. And Golf Battle, I actually liked as well. I played that so much with my wife about a year ago. We really got into that game. But it's the type of game where you've got loot boxes and you have to wait for them to open, so you're going to come back.
So this one doesn't have anything like that. It doesn't have any, from what I can tell, there's no time to loot boxes or anything like that. It's more of purchasing cosmetics, or maybe purchasing a golf bag that has extra bonuses, stuff like that. There's also like a tournament mode. There's like a campaign, a single player campaign. I want to say there's a versus mode as well. So I was playing a little bit of that, but I like playing the tournament mode because then you keep playing all the different holes and you can see how good you do. You get ranked on your stars. And then if you want, you like, oh, I only got 2 stars. Let me go back and play that hole again and see if I can do better or whatnot. I don't know. It has this weird addicting quality to it.
I should check it out then, I guess, since I liked, To my big surprise, I'm apparently a person who likes golf games.
Yeah, same here. Not real life golf, but golf games. Yes.
No. Yeah. I do enjoy real life golf. I'm just.
Oh, okay.
But it's okay. It's okay. Okay. So my righteous recommendation of this month is Kick Flight. Probably not to the biggest surprise to those who've seen my video on that game. In my opinion, this might just be one of the most ambitious multiplayer games on mobile. Till date, it's essentially, Dragon Ball in air, mid-air combat in a 3D map on a team of four players versus four other players. And then the objective of the game is that you fly around in air and you have to collect, together with your team, as many orbs as possible. And these orbs are just spread out throughout the map. And you have to collect them, and then you have to deliver them back to your team's home base. So both teams are trying to do that, but then at the same time, of course, you can attack each other in air. And I keep emphasizing in air because I feel like a lot of games have tried to really push 3D graphics and 3D games. You know, you see lots of first-person shooters on mobile these days, but then imagine having an entire other dimension, right? Because you can not only jump, but you can actually fly up into the air. So the control scheme for pulling something off like that is pretty crazy, but it works out very nicely, in my opinion, in Kick Flight. Now, it will take you a bit to get used to, of course, the controls, because you typically, you know, you're not used to flying around in a mobile game, but it just feels amazing to play. I feel like, you know, the combat is fun, the gameplay just overall is really well executed. They have this unlocking system for unlocking different types of heroes, but even though it seems like a bit of a gacha system, it's actually not a gacha system. It's just that, you know, you unlock a random unit, but the units can't be leveled up. You don't need to get more of the same units. They don't have different stars, you know, like you see it in a gacha game. And also, you're guaranteed, you know, in every pull, you're guaranteed to get a new unit. So very quickly, even as a free player, you're gonna, you know, be able to unlock all 12 of the game's units or characters that you can play as. And there's so much min-maxing going into it as well. Like, each of these characters are different. They have different abilities that they are stronger if you use those abilities. So you can attach abilities to your character, but certain characters are stronger with certain types of abilities. It's just, yeah. I mean, there's so much strategy to that game, and I'm really liking that. So that's an easy recommendation from my end, in case you guys haven't played it yet. And I heard that you haven't played it, Tiny.
I have not played it, and just by you explaining it, and I looked at the screenshots while you were talking about it, and I was like, this game looks amazing. Like you said, like, you don't see a lot of games that have that 3D realm in air combat type of thing. Like you said, calling it Dragon Ball Z-esque is like the perfect explanation, I feel like, because that's what it looks like. You're just flying through the air, collecting these orbs, getting them back to your base. I'm definitely going to be downloading it after the podcast, I'll be honest, just because of the way how excited you make it sound. I'm like, oh, this looks great.
It really is great. I feel, and you know, it has certain options, obviously, to make the game a bit easier once you're getting into it. Like, for example, target locking, right? Like, it locks automatically on a target. Some might find that less fun, but you can also turn that off and you, like, choose a more free roaming sort of setting for attacking units. And then you just have to predict sort of that you have to fire ahead of where the unit is right now, because they will move in a certain direction. You have to predict where they'll be moving. And there's also, you know, there's lots of sort of just casual matchmaking that works really well right now because the game is getting a lot of downloads, so there are lots of new players. But then later on, you also get into ranked matches, and you have different game modes that open up. I haven't played those yet because I haven't yet gotten that far into the game, but it's just so nice, and I see so many ways that these developers could expand on the game in the future. And now, of course, I just hope that the monetization won't turn extremely pay to win down the road. It does have a system, and this is sort of the main downside with the game, which isn't really a downside right now, but it's just that over time they could choose to monetize it more heavily. They have a system in place that would allow them to do that, because these abilities that I talked about before that you equip on your character, they can be leveled up. And, you know, those you do open up from sort of a loot box-like system. Right now, though, it feels like you'll be able to compete just fine as a free player, but that's typically how it is when these games launch, though. So that's sort of my main concern. I just hope that it will stay the way it is right now in terms of monetization, because otherwise, it's going to pretty quickly turn into a horrible experience. Honestly.
Yeah, because
many other PvP games.
Yeah, they want to get the fan base or get the community behind it by making it one way. Exactly. And then monetization changes all of a sudden to something drastically different. And then that could be a big, like, turn off when it comes to these type of games.
Exactly. Unfortunately. But that's, you know, that's sadly, I hate to admit this, but that is sadly just mobile gaming these days.
Yeah, it's
a tactic.
There
are a few developers who don't do that. And those are the types of developers, you know, I think you and me both try to look for and highlight those developers and, you know, play their games and highlight their games. The developers that don't do do these sorts of bait and switch tactics where they get us in and yeah, it's kind of shady. Anyway, moving on to the next segment. We've got a lot of mobile gaming news, and we're also going to talk about some interesting upcoming releases. And of course, we're going to get into that whole why can't iPhones be used in Hollywood movies later on as well. But there was a new report that came out very recently from App Annie, which is an analytics company. And I heard they, and I want to get your thoughts on this. They said that mobile gaming is expected to reach $100 billion in revenue this year, which is, by the way, and I can just add this as sort of an add-on information, that is 30% more than PC and consoles combined.
That's just a crazy number. That's just a crazy number. And to think, like,
a crazy number.
Like you said, PC and consoles combined. I mean, PC and console games, you see those ads on TV, right? You see those ads on YouTube all the time. You don't see mobile game ads on TV. You do see them on YouTube or whatnot. And just to think that $100 billion in revenue when it comes to mobile gaming, it just shows the growth that's happening right now. I mean, of course, we're getting these numbers from in-app purchases and monetization as such, but that's still a huge number and a huge amount of people who are playing these mobile games. Compared to, I mean, just when you compare it, like you said, to PC console, that's just a crazy number to me.
Yeah, and I mean, it just comes to show, I guess, that free to play, I think it's because there's so many more free to play games on mobile than on PC, and free to play games just earn more money. And that's just the way it is. I mean, there's just more money in free to play when you can monetize it more heavily if you have an audience that don't mind that monetization.
You know? Yeah, as long as it's driving the game, and like you said, as long as there's people who are going to be spending that money necessarily to, you know, it's a fun game, they like it, you know, it's not shady tactics like we talked about before, because not all monetization is bad. I mean, we have to be real here. I mean, we like to complain sometimes about the monetization and in-app purchases, but there are times when if it's done well and you're enjoying a game and you put 40 hours into this, like, free-to-play game, let's say, and you pay, and you, I don't know, if you spent $10 or something, you feel like you got your money's worth in that sense.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And I think there are also games where, depending on how hardcore you want to play, even though some might argue that certain games have a pretty hefty monetization system, if you don't have to be within the top 10 of players, or top 1%, I should say, of players, then you're going to have a great time. You know, it's just as a casual player, sort of playing that mid-tier ranking, instead of going for the, like, top 1% in the case of a PvP game, is what I'm talking about here. And you know, then of course you have your, I think gacha games get a bad rep, right? Because they can monetize so heavily, but they can also have really nice monetization. And I think, you know, people who don't play gachas too often, they just see it all at you know, as one. But there are gacha games out there that actually have a decent monetization. And the same goes for MMORPGs. There are MMORPGs out there that have a decent monetization. I think RuneScape is a good example of that.
There you go.
You know, RuneScape has a great monetization system, and you know, it's coming to mobile now, right? First old school, and then very soon also RuneScape 3. So, you know, there are definitely some good games out there. Now, another interesting fact, by the way, they also mentioned in this report, this analytics report from App Annie, was that RPG games, shooters, and then other MMO games, they made up only 18% of all downloaded games last year.
Wow.
But they made up 76% of all spending on in-app purchases, right?
Wow.
So of that $100 billion, I don't know how much of that $100 billion of revenue comes from in-app purchases and how much of it comes from advertisements, but of the amount of money that comes from in-app purchases, 18% of the games make up 76% of all that revenue. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a crazy number. And then I'm very curious. I'm like, okay, so 18% of these type of games are being downloaded. So what are the other games being downloaded? Are they puzzle games? Are they match three games? Are they what?
Yes.
Hidden object
that's
games?
It.
Like what? Yeah.
No, that's
is it?
It.
Yeah. That's
everything
the,
you just
that's
said.
What it is. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I looked at the report. I don't remember the exact numbers, but yeah, it's hyper casual games, casual games, and hyper casual games. Those are your, what's that app, what's that game company called? Voodoo? Is that the name? Like Voodoo, like with lots of O's?
I think
that
makes
those
that's
like
right.
Really, yeah, really hyper casual games. They get a ton of downloads. They don't necessarily earn the most money per game, but they make lots of mobile games and they get a lot of downloads. And And also, we have to take into consideration that this number is only about in-app purchases. So I think Voodoo, their games typically earn more money from advertising.
Yeah.
Right? From showing ads.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. And I heard that spending on ads in mobile apps, so not just games, but just like mobile apps in general, was $240 billion last year. So that's the amount of money that like companies spend on advertisements in mobile apps.
I wonder what games what games we're seeing the most. Could it be Raid Shadowgun Legends? Oh, I said it wrong.
Yeah, Raid Shadow Legends, oh man. You know, people in my... I did my end of the year video where I compared the 46 best games of last year, or most, you know, highly anticipated games that released last year. And people in the comments were mentioning like, wait, this video isn't sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends? You know, it's
what
kind of become
mean?
A joke at this point.
Yeah, when you it has become a joke because you see it everywhere and then you see YouTubers who sponsor it and all that stuff. And one time I did a joke in one of my videos where I acted like I was sponsoring it, but I really wasn't because I actually played that game and I reviewed that game, and that game is not what everyone says it is. They say it's so fun. They say, oh, it's the best, you know, RPG experience on mobile and this and that, and the graphics are great. Well, yeah, the graphics are great, but
the graphics are great.
You got to play the game and realize that there's not really much of a game there if you think about it.
And it's so easy to hear that everyone is just reading off of a script.
Oh yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think we're kind of digging ourselves into a dangerous place here, though.
Yeah,
you know, we're never gonna get sponsored by Raid now.
They're never gonna.
But still, you know, there are other games out there that are, you know, would be kind of cool to be sponsored by. But at the same time, how do you stay objective anymore, right?
Yeah.
If you're getting sponsored by a mobile games company and you cover mobile games, that's a tricky one. Well, moving on to the next news. I don't know if you played it yet, but Dragon Raya released just, I think, last week as of the recording of this video.
Is it Raya or Raja?
Raja, it might be Raja, I don't know. I say Raya, maybe I'm butchering it completely.
No, you could be
sure
right,
some
actually.
Hardcore fans.
I would not know how to pronounce it.
Dragon Raya, I don't know. As a Dane, I would say Raya.
There you
completely
go.
Completely wrong. You know, it's a huge MMORPG. It's based on the PC MMORPG that released back in year 2000. So it closed in 2011, I think, the original version of that PC game. But it's also based on just like a fantasy novel that apparently has sold a lot of copies in Asia as well. And it takes up 5.6 gigabyte of space.
Holy moly. That's a lot of space.
Gigabyte. I think it's the biggest mobile game I've played, like in terms of how much space it takes up.
You're going to need an external drive for
almost,
bad boy.
Right?
It's funny because I downloaded the game. Took forever, and I downloaded the game. I have yet to play it yet because I wanted to do a video on it. But I was looking at images of it, and the graphics look pretty amazing.
The graphics are great. I mean, they really are great, and especially when you consider how big of a world you're running around in. So obviously, it's much easier to make a game with a very small world, but with really crisp and high-quality graphics. But when you have a huge MMORPG, the reason why you don't typically see really stunning graphics in MMORPGs is that you have to create a world that's sometimes, you know, 10, 20, maybe even 50 times larger than your average, you know, non-MMORPG game. And, you know, hence why it takes up 5.6 gigabyte of space.
True. So have you played it?
I did play it.
Okay.
I did play it, yes. I didn't find... Maybe I'm starting off in the wrong place here, but like I don't want to bash the combat system. I just didn't find it super interesting. Like it didn't really do anything new, in my opinion. However, there are so many other things you can do in this game. Like you can get a freaking job in the game. Like you can become a chef, like a cook, right? Like a chef. Or try to become a rock star, like a singer
in the game.
And the setting for the game, I guess, is kind of interesting as well. It's not a high fantasy orcs and elves kind of MMORPG, but instead it takes place in the future. And you know, they actually have decent English voiceovers as well for the quest line, which is also appreciated. I guess that might actually take up some space as well, all of that voiceover audio. And yeah, it's a high-quality game. But, I mean, it does have its auto systems. It does have its, you know, auto-questing, auto-combat. If you don't like that, you're probably not going to like the game. But I will say, though, it is trying to stand out from the rest of the pack in terms of just how much content it can actually deliver. It's also the type of game, though, and this is my biggest complaint about the game, it's the type of game where you don't really get rewarded for just grinding monsters, like just running around killing monsters on your own. You kind of have to do you kind of have to do events, right? Like events or raids or stuff like that to get loot and gold. Maybe I'm just more old school. Like I like RuneScape because yeah. I can just run around and kill some monsters and that levels me up. And if I want to do quests, I can, but I don't have to do do quests to progress in the game. I don't know how you feel about that, but like I'm an old school like MMORPG player. I've spent thousands of hours in MMORPGs on PC, so I guess that's why I like those types of systems. But you so rarely see them in mobile games.
Like the true old school, like you said, MMORPG systems. Because there's this huge rush in mobile gaming to have like MMORPGs. I mean, how many of them are on the App Store right now? It's crazy, right? So it's like you pick one, you play one, and they kind of sort of all blend together when it comes to like the systems or how they play or how, you know, the gameplay works. I was super excited for Black Desert Mobile when it came out. But then when I played it, I was kind of disappointed because I was like, okay, it kind of incorporated the same mobile systems that these other games have with the auto questing and the auto this and that. And auto questing, I don't want to bag on auto questing too much because there is a time when it's nice to be able to just push a button and okay, it takes you to the next quest, you know, instead of you actually going there. Yeah. I get that aspect. But at the same time, when it comes to grinding or doing what you would do in like a traditional MMORPG, like you're talking about on PC or elsewhere, they just don't, so far I haven't found one that just fits that like that mold or fits that like, oh man, this is just like, well, RuneScape Mobile, like you said, is probably the closest we'll get to it. And that's because it's a port. Yeah. So
exactly. It's a port. Yeah, it's just a client. It's the same game. It's just a client. We can access it from your phone. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, the search goes on. I mean, I'll keep looking for
the search continues. Yes, that's what your mobile gaming quest is all about, right, Nimble?
That's what it's about.
Yes,
that's
you
correct.
Want to find the perfect MMORPG on mobile.
Yeah. I mean, that's very much true.
Yeah, I'm holding you to that. No.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we got some, believe it or not, we got some Stadia news, everybody.
Everyone's
excited. Nimble's excited for his Stadia news.
Yeah. I still am.
Well, it turns out Stadia is still going, they're still going strong, I guess we could put it that way. They actually have released an update, I think it was on February 20th, that they Stadia is now available on more devices, more mobile devices. So that includes some Samsung devices, I want to say Razer devices, the Razer 1 and 2, and of course the Asus ROG gaming phone is available as well. So you can download the app, you can create your account, you can start buying games, and you can actually play them from your from those phones now. Whereas before, you were only able to play from, I want to say, the Google Pixel.
Yep.
So now they're opening it up for more people to go ahead and start giving it a try. I have heard rumors, though, and this is just rumors, so take it with a grain of salt, that of course there still is a lot of people, like the founders, people who are still a little upset with the lack of games. Google did make an announcement recently that in 2020 they are going to be releasing a lot more games, essentially first party, or I want to say maybe Google Stadia exclusives. These aren't necessarily AAA games. They're going to be a lot of like indie type games. I want to say like SteamWorld. If everyone's heard of those SteamWorld type games, they're going to be releasing a bunch of those specifically for Stadia. So I don't know if some people might be excited about that. Some people might not be. I have yet to try Stadia to this day. I'm kind of waiting for it to, I want to say officially release, but even though it is released. I'm sure we'll get to it one of these days, right?
I haven't played it yet either. So,
and you were so excited about it. I thought you'd be the first to play it. I thought you were going to drop $500 on a founder, man.
Well, okay. So right now it's only available for founders, and that's the reason why I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, same here.
I would love to play Doom Eternal on my smartphone. That's kind of my dream. Now I have a OnePlus 7 Pro, so I can't really play it yet. I still have to wait. On PC, I can't even test it either because I think you still have to be a founder, right? I think you do. Or at least you have to buy the premium version of it. And I'm really just looking to try the free version at first, which is what I'm most excited about. I mean, I'm completely fine with playing in 1080p and then just streaming my games, just buying the games directly.
I want to say March is supposed to be, apparently, quote me on this, but I think March is when they're supposed to, this month actually, they're supposed to release it, basically the free version. So yeah, you just buy the game and then you can play it on your phone.
There we go.
Yeah,
there
so hopefully go. Soon you'll be playing, and Doom Eternal comes out this in March, so hey, it might be just in it's time perfect. For you. Yeah, it's perfect.
So maybe I'll be able to do a follow-up in the next episode or the episode after that, maybe?
Yeah, Google Stadia.
Cool.
We'll call it Nimble's Google Stadia Extravaganza.
Yes, that sounds great. It would just be 40 minutes of me either bashing the service or just praising it.
Yeah,
probably.
Exactly.
I think it's going to be one or the other. Nothing in between. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Google, since we're already talking about Google, Google has their Play Pass. We all know about the Play Pass, which is kind of their, alternative to Apple Arcade, minus mm-hmm. all the exclusives. Google Play Pass has actually been adding a lot more games to the service. So if you are a Play Pass subscriber, you can now download certain games, including, I think it's called Battle Chasers RPG. I actually have Battle Chasers. I bought it probably last week. I had a credit on my Google account. Let me buy this $10 game, which some people consider pricey for a premium game on mobile. But I've said it before and I'll say it again. I will support premium games on mobile because they seem to be, you know, full-fledged gameplay experiences. Like I'm knocking free to play at all, but you just get a really good game from start to finish. And Battle Chasers is actually an awesome game. It's a turn-based RPG. The graphics are amazing. It's like a 2D art style, very crisp, very clear. And this game is challenging, folks. So, like, if you like old school turn-based games where, you know, if you don't defend instead of attack or something along those lines, you can get a one-hit kill and somebody can, like, demolish your party or something like that. So it's really cool. If you guys want to check it out, it's called Battle Chasers. I mean, it's free for Play Pass subscribers. Then again, you end up paying for PayPlat. I'll say that five times fast. Play Pass.
There we go.
I got it.
Right. Yeah, you got it. Well, and I mean, over on the Apple side, I mean, that's interesting, you know, that Play Pass is adding more and more games. I don't have that subscription either. But I also heard that Apple Arcade, some people are projecting them to reach 12 million subscribers this year.
Wow.
And again, this is not coming from Apple directly. This is just some researcher or some person who sort of projected that they're going to reach that number. That's pretty impressive, though. I think that's pretty impressive. And so I think, you know, Google is still pushing hard. It doesn't surprise me that they're, you know, probably essentially, I don't know if they are, but like maybe they're paying developers to add their games to the Play Pass, like literally giving them a chunk of cash.
Wouldn't I feel surprise like that's me. What I mean, it, that's yeah, what, I feel like that's what it is.
Yeah, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. what Apple did. Like, giving $500 million away to developers to make games for the service. Like, my view on this is still that I think it's all going to fail at the end of the day. Because we just talked about how much money there is in free-to-play games, right?
Yeah.
Why on earth would I, making a premium game, choose to add it to one of these services when, you know, if I have a really amazing premium game, I could just sell it standalone and I would earn more because I wouldn't have to share the revenue with, you know, with so many other developers on mm-hmm. these services, right? You know, for every $5 that Apple receives for the Apple Arcade subscription, that money is going to be, you know, be split across a lot of different developers, and Apple is taking a cut as well, right? So either I could make a premium game, and if I know that it's really great, I could sell it upfront for a premium price and probably earn more. I mean, this is a bit speculative, of course, but you know, if we just play along with this train of thought, or I could make a free-to-play game if I really wanted to make money, right? Why would I add it to one of these services if not, you know, one, either to get the exposure that Apple and Google is sort of giving these games, right? But that is going to fade away over time, is my guess. You know, when these services first launch, of course, both Apple and Google have to do a lot of marketing to, you know, get people to come onto those services. And so they're going to highlight certain developers. And that's a nice incentive for developers. And also Apple, as I said before, is literally paying for the development of these games. $500 million. That's not, I mean, it's pocket cash, you know, for pocket money for Apple. But it's a lot of money for many developers out there, right? Like many mobile game developers. But once they stop doing that, who would, you know, who in their right mind would develop a game for Apple Arcade or Google Play Pass? I just don't think the math adds up. Sorry for the little mini rant here, but it's not really a rant.
No,
it's more so just an observation about how these subscription services work. It's a bit different if you are one company and you're developing all the games on your own, and then you make a subscription service. Then it's a bit different because all the revenue is going to you anyway. But when you have these systems where, when I mentioned that, by the way, I was kind of thinking about EA and Xbox and you know,
Ubisoft. Ubisoft has their own too on PC. Yeah.
That's different. But with Apple Arcade, Apple have to continue adding new games to the game to the service, and that means that $5, even though they're adding lots of new subscribers, that money is going to be split across a lot of different developers.
And the thing I always think about, I hate to sound cynical about subscription services, but the thing I always like to think about is like, okay, Let's think long term here. 10 years from now, is this subscription service going to exist, right? Is Apple or is Google going to abandon it at some point? I mean, of course, they're not going to tell us that that's what would happen 10 years from now, let's say. But if it does, I always have that weird concern or that thought process that, okay, I paid monthly this for this amount of long, which equates to a lot of money from the consumer. Mm. I mean, I know it sounds like $5 a month isn't much, but let's stretch that out over 10 years or whatnot. And then that service ends, and then I don't have access to those games or something along those lines is what I'm getting at. And sometimes I always wonder about that too. Or, I mean, we've said this before too, I go a whole month without even touching Apple Arcade, but yet I paid my $5. And I that thought process in my head always gets to me. And eventually other people might end up thinking that way as well. And that's why they have to put so much money into it to get new games, so to keep people interested, you know, so it does become a cycle. But like you said, I just don't see this substantially, or it staying, or it being viable for these companies, including Apple and Google, to just keep pushing it. You know, eventually there's an end in sight, I feel like.
I agree. I will play the devil's advocate a bit here, though, because you said that in 10 years that these services are still going to be around, right? Mm-hmm. I guess the counter argument, to be fair, it's not that I don't agree with you, but I think the counter argument would be that, I mean, they might not be around, but would you play a 10-year-old mobile game in 10 years from now?
That's a good point.
I mean,
point.
You might, for funs and giggles, you know, just if
nostalgia.
You have it available. Nostalgia, you might want to go back. But if it's not available, is that really going to be an issue in 10 years, you know, for you?
Because there'll be something else at that point, right?
Yeah, there'll be something else at that point. And if you are missing one game, is it really that big of a difference to just pay for that premium game? If it's still around, like pay whatever, $5, $10, $20 to get that one game, is that really, you know, too much? And then, you know, over the past 10 years, at least you've had access to hundreds of different games through this subscription. So that's sort of, if you have to play the devil's advocate or like do the counter
argument. The reverse side, yeah.
That's the other side of it. That's the counter argument. But you're still absolutely right, though. It could be that it closes already in a few years, and you don't feel like you've gotten your money's worth because you bought in now expecting that more games would release. And if that doesn't happen, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. 10 years is a long time. But yeah, if you turn that timetable back, let's say, and say next year, not saying that's what's going to happen, then it really starts to become a thing like, well, wow, I've only had this service for a year or something along those lines. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see what happens. I think they're going to be around, probably, but time will tell. One game that I am looking forward to coming around at some point, by the way, is Blizzard, I'm looking at you, Diablo Immortal, because some of us do have phones. That's such an old meme, wow. But we do, and there's a bit of a news here, because it has been rumored, that the game will enter alpha testing in 2020 at some point, so hopefully that means a global alpha testing. Knowing the mobile space, it might mean a regional alpha testing. So we'll have to see about that. But something is going to happen this year. That's sort of the news. That's all we know, I think, right? We don't have a specific date yet. But Blizzard, Activision Blizzard, had their quarterly investors call, investors meeting, shareholder meeting. And that's where this was mentioned. They kind of just promised the investors that something would happen in 2020.
It's like the first update for Diablo Immortal in like how long, I feel like, besides they had a video out, I think, that showed new gameplay sections or whatnot. Mm. But this, I mean, we've been talking about Diablo Immortal for what, close to 2 years now, I want to say. I think it was at BlizzCon 2018 when it was announced. And it seems like it's just kind of like disappeared, and then like it pops up and then disappears. I have a theory that I think a lot has changed in the game. I feel like they might have had some feedback somewhere. Well, of course, they've had a lot of feedback. They might have had some internal testing.
You think? Yeah. Just a little feedback over on Reddit?
just a tiny bit of feedback. They might have had some internal testing. They might have even hired testers at some point. I mean, they had to have within the last 2 years. I'm assuming they've been making some changes. So, I mean, I'm kind of hoping and I'm kind of dreaming that those changes are for the better, and that when this alpha testing does come out, that we might be a little bit surprised on what we're getting. I'm kind of being a little positive here. I'm always in the camp of when I play a lot of PC and console games, and I'm in the camp of when a game gets delayed, I always like to think it's for the better. I like to think, okay, they're working out glitches, they're working out the kinks, or they're making the best game experience that we could possibly have, let's just say. And I'm not saying that's exactly what Blizzard is doing, but I am saying I'm hoping that they made some changes and some tweaks to it to make it more Diablo-esque. If it's just a sliver of a Diablo game, like I said, I'll be happy. So I'm going to take this news as good news, I guess, with the question mark, air quotes.
Yeah, with a question mark. No, I guess it's good news. I mean, I guess it's good news. And I don't mind waiting if the game is better when it then releases. Mm-hmm. I'm just a bit worried. There's been lots, like in general, inside Activision Blizzard, there's been lots of key people who made, you know, all the old games we all love to play.
Yeah.
They've been leaving the company recently. They're all quitting. The company is turning in a direction that is not good for the consumer, for the most part. Activision Blizzard seems not to care that much about the old Blizzard games anymore. And I am afraid that this is them attempting to prove that they can take a Blizzard game. Mm. Not an Activision game, but like a Blizzard game. One of these old franchises. They can take it to mobile and they can milk it for money. Like, this is the skeptical side of me, right? Like, the positive side of me, the glass half full kind of guy that I typically am, I'm all excited, you know, for for getting a game like this on mobile. I'm just getting a bit cynical, I guess.
And I don't blame you, because like you said, Blizzard is not the same company that they were.
It really
what is it?
Isn't.
Not even 5 years ago.
No, exactly. You guys, like, you should look into it. Like, just do a quick Google search. People are leaving that company like crazy. Like, key people are fleeing the company.
I mean, they had their whole fiasco. I don't know if you looked into it or if you're familiar with. They did the Warcraft 3 Reforged Edition.
Yeah.
So I played Warcraft 3 back when I was, I think, I want to say high school, how long ago that was, let's just say. And I loved that game. That was an awesome RTS game with a great story, great mechanics, amazing. And I was actually excited for Reforged. And then when it came out, I mean, I don't have to go over all the issues that it had. A lot of you are familiar with, they promised, you know, it to look like this or to play like this. And it was not that. It was actually worse than the original Warcraft 3. I mean, people would rather go back and play that one. And to me, that was just a huge wake-up call, too, to show people, like, this is not the same Blizzard that it was. I mean, if this was the same Blizzard, they would have put everything into this game, and it would have been perfect. So I am also very skeptical as well, especially the milking the franchise part, because that sounds very 2020 Blizzard right now.
Exactly, which is why I'm concerned. On the other end, though, we have a company like Nintendo, right? And they've been trying to prove that they can make money on mobile. It's so funny to look back, sit here in 2020 and look back at Nintendo. It started out with them saying, I want to say like 5 years ago, that they were never going to release any, they said this, like they were never going to release any Nintendo game on mobile. I remember that very clearly. Like, it was like, this is not our strategy.
Yeah, they took a stance, right? They like drew a line in the sand.
Exactly.
They said, we're not crossing this line.
And, you know, then just a year later or something like that, not that far after that statement was made, or not that long after that statement was made, they released a mobile game, or they started talking about releasing mobile games. And now, so the news I want to get to here is that now Nintendo, I wanted to say Blizzard, but Nintendo has finally now earned $1 billion on mobile. And so why is that news now? Well, I guess because, I mean, if you earn $1 billion, you've kind of proven that you can earn money on mobile.
Yeah.
I know it sounds like a crazy amount of money, and it is a crazy amount of money. But earning $100 million, for example, isn't enough for these big companies. And it doesn't have to do with greed, actually. Like, I don't want to sit here and protect them or defend them, but it doesn't so much have to do with greed, but it just has to do with how much money it actually costs to develop a game. And if your game only earns $100 million or $50 million, it's not a huge success. It's not what, I can guarantee you guys that, like, it's not what the big companies were hoping for, because you have to remember that they make, you know, maybe two or three games that fail. And then they make that one success, and it has to earn back its own development cost and the development cost of all other games, and, you know, and then some, right? Like, then some profit for the company as well. So that's why they have to earn so much. But yeah, anyway, it's just like the news is that Nintendo has now earned $1 billion, and most of that has come from Fire Emblem Heroes, which I actually haven't played yet. Have you played it,
Fire Emblem? I played Fire Emblem Heroes when it first came out, and it was very enjoyable, actually. Grid-based, turn-based RPG, very enjoyable. I can see why it earned so much, because it had the gacha mechanics where you have to like get certain heroes and all that fun stuff. I think it's just very interesting that, you know, they earned their first $1 billion, which is an amazing and it's a great number. But I think you brought up this point that other companies have earned their first $1 billion, I mean, in way short amount of time compared to Nintendo. And you think Nintendo is this huge company that, you know, is just a powerhouse that came through to mobile gaming. And that's not really the case. You know, $1 billion is $1 billion. But I mean, what was the game we were talking about? Fate Grand Order, let's say. That game is produced by Sony, a company that's owned by Sony, and that has earned $4 billion at this point. And that's on just that game. That's not any other game that's owned by that same company or that's been released. That's $4 billion on Fate Grand Order alone. So, I mean, you compare those two numbers to them earning their first billion, and could it be that Nintendo is young when it comes to mobile gaming? Sure, it could be, but you would think that Nintendo would drive those Nintendo fans for Mario Kart, let's say, for Fire Emblem, let's say, and that their revenue would just be this super high amount, and unfortunately doesn't seem to have equated to what they wanted to.
No. And, you know, to be fair, I guess Pokemon Go, you know, Pokemon is a Nintendo franchise. It just wasn't released it wasn't published and developed by Nintendo. It was by Niantic, as you all probably know. And that game has earned, I think, over $3 billion, if I recall correctly. It's at least, you know, multiple billions of dollars, that game alone. So it's not like the Nintendo franchises haven't earned money. It's just that Nintendo, when they make their own games and release and publish them on mobile, they haven't been as successful. So I think there's sort of a missed opportunity there. I don't think they know how to make mobile games properly, like really, really nailing it. I don't think they've done that yet. Maybe with Fire Emblem Heroes, but apart from that, not really, truly nailing that mobile space yet. They're still releasing games though. I'm excited. I'll play any new Nintendo game that releases on mobile.
Same here. Yep. Just out of sheer curiosity to see how they do it, what mechanics they implement, and as an old school Nintendo fan, of course. Yeah, I'm always part of the downloads. Whenever they make the announcement, oh, this many downloads on Mario Kart, I'm part of those downloads.
Yeah, same here. Of course. Well, now, I guess the big story. You have to break this one.
This is the big news, guys. I was just going to say, yeah, we have breaking news. The most, you know, this is the most interesting story. This is the most important story of this podcast.
Directly from Hollywood.
Yes, direct. Yes. Yeah, direct. TMZ has reported. Yes, so there's this big article going around that villains can't use iPhones in movies because it upsets Apple. I found this very, very interesting. There's product placement in all these Hollywood movies, of course. People are using these devices. You'll watch a movie and you'll see somebody using a Sony computer, let's say. But according to the director, Rian Johnson, he is the director that directed a recent movie called Knives Out. He also did the Star Wars movie. Which one was it? Not Force Awakens, the second one. Oh, I can't remember the names. They all run together. He did the second Star Wars movie of the new trilogy. And he basically said in an interview that Apple looks down upon or frowns upon or even kind of tells people when they're doing movies not to let their villains in the movies use iPhones. And I find this so interesting. And I find it kind of funny that the villains don't use iPhones. Like, what are they using? Are they using Android devices? Are they trying to say that Android's the villain? Come to the dark side, I guess, right? In that sense. But I just find it super interesting that that's the case, and that their heroes, of course, are going to be using iPhones. And another thing, I was reading this article more. I was really into this article. The director of Parasite won Academy Award Best Movie. He had it to where the rich people in the movie were using iPhones and the poor people were using Android devices. And I find that funny too, because it's this misconception that you've always hear that, like, you know, Android devices are for the lesser and Apple are for, you know, I guess the ritzy rich people, which really isn't the case. I mean, we've
it's
a perception thing.
Exactly. And you know, you look at Samsung's new Galaxy S20 Ultra, whatever it's
yeah,
called then.
And Ultra you look at the price S point, 900. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the price point's
outrageous. And you look at the price point, yeah. and then, you know, it's pretty clear that you won't be able to afford this phone if you don't have a lot of money. You kind of have to be somewhat rich to buy such a phone. Isn't it $1,500? I think it's $1,500 for the biggest
for their,
of
like,
it
yeah, for their US. Ultra edition. Yeah, it's like close to $1,500. Yeah. I mean, that's rent.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's that's a two-bedroom apartment or something, you know. That's just crazy. I mean, and
it is. It is
the
crazy.
Misconception when it comes to that comes from the fact, I believe, that Android devices or Android, the operating system, can run on many different devices. So, yes, you can buy an Android phone from a company that's, you know, not well-known or that's a little bit cheaper. So, I mean, there is $500 Android phones out there, of course. You know, there's not $500 iPhones. You know, if you want to go the opposite direction, unless they do like their lower end model. So I guess where the misconception comes from, but I find it really funny that Apple is very particular about not letting their villains use iPhones.
But yeah, so like let's play this out. So like an Apple executive sat down and said, hey, like someone brought up to me the other day that maybe it's an issue that villains use iPhones. Can we have someone look into that, right? And this executive puts together a team, a little squad team of researchers who have to very seriously look into, and imagine this, like they had to sit, I imagine like they had to sit and watch movies and kind of count how many times iPhones were used by villains. Because, you know, how else are they going to evaluate if this is really an issue, right?
Yeah, like are they going to watch every single Hollywood movie that's released or every single movie that's released just to find out?
I can only imagine that's what they did, right? And then they have to deliver some sort of report to the executive showing with some fancy graphs, like this is the amount of movies where an iPhone was clearly used by a villain. This is the amount of movies where the hero, the good guy, was using an iPhone, right? What does this mean for Apple? What does it mean for our stock prices?
Yeah, what does it mean? Yeah, exactly. People are going to associate us with evil villains and we don't want that. And it's funny because as I'm reading the article, and I keep going through it, and it keeps bringing up Apple's policy. So it's a policy, meaning it's written down somewhere in a document, you know, saying that this is our policy. Yeah. And they even got specific with it, too, saying along the lines of it really applies to well-established villains. So I guess like Bond villains or like a serial killer in a movie. Yeah, like they want it to be if it's a well-established villain. So basically, Thanos cannot have an iPhone.
No. That's a no-go.
He's
too well-established.
He's too, maybe exactly.
Like sort of an, yeah, maybe if it's an indie villain, like an indie movie villain, right?
Yeah, exactly. A low-budget movie villain. They can have an iPhone. But at that point, if they're low-budget movie, they can't afford the iPhone, so they wouldn't have it.
That's true. So they won't have that problem anyway. Oh, man, that is such a funny story. I mean, it might be the most weird and fun and just kind of out there story that we've ever reported in this podcast. It can really only go down from here. I guess that's the downside.
Yeah. No, that was the highlight of this podcast was that one
Thanks,
story.
Guys. Like, we had a great run.
All right, don't forget to subscribe.
nine episodes. No, seriously. That was a fun story. But I don't know how to move on from that story.
Yeah. How do you segue from that, right?
How do you segue from that? I guess you do like this. Guys, I have sad news. Shadowgun Wargames released. That's not the sad news. Okay, so I've got good news. Shadowgun Wargames released.
Yes.
However, it is not as good as we thought it was going to be. Dum, dum, dum.
Unfortunately.
Do you have some insights? Yeah. Do you have some insights you want to
share? Okay. I played Shadowgun Legends, right? Shadowgun Legends came up before this. Loved that game. Super excited. It was so fun. It was
really
like
well made.
Yeah, Destiny-like experience. The shooting was great. You know, the graphics. You could do so much, right? You could do PvP. You can go single player. You can go co-op. You know, you're collecting gear. It was just a very well done game. So when they announced that Shadowgun Wargames was coming out, I was super excited, right? Madfinger Games is creating an Overwatch-like style PvP shooter. I mean, I knew what I was getting into. It's going to be a multiplayer-only type game where you're fighting other people, you're doing Capture the Flag, you're doing Team Deathmatch. Cool. I get into it. The shooting is good because, of course, I wouldn't expect anything else. The movement, the graphics. But why is it, I don't know why, that I just didn't want to play it until my fingers bled. It just didn't excite me, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Right.
It wasn't new enough. It wasn't, I just can't really quite put my finger on it. Pardon the pun, because you play with your fingers. But I just, something about it just wasn't, it didn't grab me, I guess. I just can't really figure it out. What is your thoughts on it?
You're not alone in that, by the way. Like, I feel the same. And also, I just checked up on it. Over on Google Play, at least, it only has a 3.4 average score, which is really bad.
Wow,
you know, Raid Shadow Legends has a, I think, 4.6.
Yeah,
so up there. So getting a 3.4, if we use Raid Shadow Legends as the gold standard of ratings, we probably shouldn't. But yeah, 3.4. So I guess my biggest issue with the game was, I don't know, I just didn't like the controls. I feel like I think they went in a different direction than control scheme wise than their other games. They made it difficult to customize the controls. I at least didn't find any settings when I played it. Now, it should be said, I played it just when it released, so some things might have actually already changed between then and then now. But when I played it, for example, there's one hero you can play as, which is called Sarah, which is dangerously close to Farah from Overwatch, and it's sort of the same character.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, I wonder why. No, but with Sarah, which uses sort of a rocket launcher gun almost, you have to aim down the sight, like, off the gun. And, I mean, you don't have to, but, like, if you really want to aim properly, you kind of have to. And there's no so you do that on the right side of the screen, and there's no shooting button on the left side of the screen. And that's an issue, because you have to look around on one side of the screen and move around on the other side and aim and shoot. Many games have gotten this right, but the way most of them do this, Fortnite, PUBG Mobile, Call of Duty Mobile, you know, the way they do this is by adding a trigger button on both sides of the screen, so that when you zoom in, or like when you aim down the sight and you have to look around at the same time, you can shoot on the left side. How could they overlook that? Like, I'm even saying this, I'm a bit afraid that I might have overlooked a setting, but when I played it, I couldn't find that setting. And it just blew my mind, because it seems like the most, it's such a core part of a first-person shooter or shooter on mobile, is having solid controls. And I feel like they almost got it right, but not quite, right? They didn't, and I think maybe that's how you feel about the game overall as well. It's okay, it's just not amazing.
Like, it's not what, you know? I guess it could be okay. Maybe our hype was too much for it, or maybe I was expecting a lot from it. But like you said, it just wasn't this amazing experience. And I'm sure people are going to get enjoyment out of it. Yes, there's some fun moments there to be had. But I just can't pinpoint. I just wasn't enjoying gameplay after gameplay of. And the map.
You didn't want to continue playing.
I didn't want to continue playing. And the map variety is not there. Now, of course, they're probably going to update maps or whatnot. But I have to have played, like, probably the same two maps for, like, 10 straight matches. And after that, I was like, okay, do we have any other maps here? Or is it just these like, two or three maps that I'm playing on? And that's a good point you brought up with the shooting and the mechanics. I didn't realize that when I first started talking about it. But you're right. When you're playing as that character and you try to do it, like, iron sights or zoom in with, I think it's, like, a bazooka or something. Yeah, it's very hard to push that, that fire button, because you're aiming at the same time, and you're just kind of like, okay, that's awkward. And it's probably the reason why I stopped playing as that character. I played as the big berserker guy most of the time, which I enjoyed my time with him, of course, but it didn't grab me, you know? I wasn't spending extra time on the toilet just so I can get one more match in. And I did that a lot with Call of Duty Mobile, by the way. A lot of toilet time. I'm almost done, honey. She's all, really? You've been pooping for 2 hours. Well, I'm playing COD Mobile.
It's too bad. I mean, I expected more from them as well.
Yeah.
The developers are great. I do kind of hope, and I do think, actually, that they will be able to turn the game around. And I say this just because of how much I actually trust these developers.
Yeah, and they take feedback very well, too.
They take feedback very well. They have proven themselves over the years to make great games. They know how to make shooters. I don't know what went wrong here. I don't know if they had to rush the release, if there were shareholders pushing them. I don't know their company structure. I don't know what went wrong, but it feels a bit rushed. It feels like the type of experience you would get from a game that just needs, you know, another 6 months, maybe 4 to 6 months of just tweaking and, like, optimizing the gameplay experience and tweaking small things. I guess this is why you have soft launches, right? Or early access versions. But I don't know. It's unfortunate. But I guess, you know, maybe some of you guys listening here really enjoyed the game, and I don't want to sit here just bashing it completely because it's not a horrible game. So, but you know, if you've played it, you know, and you're watching on YouTube or somewhere, we can leave a comment. We'd be curious to hear what you think about it, of course. It seems overall not a lot of people enjoyed it, though, unfortunately.
Yes, I am one of them.
Yeah, me too. Now, we actually have a few anticipated games. You know, additional anticipated games, because we already talked about anticipated games of 2020 in last month's episode in early January. But some new ones have come up, and we also forgot some, I think. You mentioned Dead Cells?
Yes, so Dead Cells. So basically, yes, we did our big list of games that we wanted to look forward to, and we did miss a few. Dead Cells is supposed to be releasing very soon, actually. And that was that 2D fighter / roguelike type game that I think released on consoles and PC last year. And there's been rumblings of a mobile version for a while now. So apparently there's supposed to be a release coming up. I'm thinking it's going to be one of those surprise releases where, like, oh, guess what? Dead Cells is available on mobile now. And that should be coming very soon. Yeah, so I'm kind of excited for that one. They said February. I was reading in one of their developer blogs. But I think that's been pushed, obviously, to sometime in March. So I am looking forward to that.
My question is, isn't it? I think it is already out on iOS. I'm pretty sure it is.
So I think you're right, though, because they did release it on iOS a while back. So I think we're waiting for a Google release.
Yeah, we're just waiting for the Android release.
I'm sorry. Yes, Android release. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, that's an interesting one coming up. I also heard of a new game called Harry Potter Magic Awakened.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, that's another. No, I didn't hear about it before, just about an hour or two ago, when I was researching prior to this recording this podcast episode. But apparently Harry Potter Magic Awakened is a CCG, it's like a collectible card game in the Harry Potter universe. And you know how it can go with these games. Either it can just sort of be the same thing over again, just in the Harry Potter theme franchise setting, right? I hope they're going to do something a bit more interesting. I think it could become... So, I'm not a huge Potter fan, right? Or Potterhead or whatever they call them.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you mean you're not a Potterhead?
Yeah. I'm not a... I like the movies. I've read some of the books when I was younger. It's fine. I mean, I'm enjoying it. But I'm not a huge hardcore fan. But I am interested in playing Harry Potter Magic Awakened, though. I've played a really awesome Harry Potter physical board game recently. So, I've kind of sort of been... reintroduced to the whole franchise again now, and Harry Potter Magic Awakened, I don't know when it's going to release, but I think it's going to release this year, so that's why I sort of included it on this list. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Another game that we forgot to mention on the last podcast, and that it was actually brought up to me by one of my subscribers in the comment section, was a game called Project Odin. And I was very curious about this because I was like, what's this all about? Project Odin, what is that? You know, I thought it was just a working title or whatnot. And I looked into it, and it's actually an MMORPG that's set to release on mobile. And from what I saw, it uses like the Unreal Engine 4, I think. And the graphics look amazing. That game is probably going to be a 6 gig download, I'll be sure. But yeah, there's YouTube videos showing some of like the walkthroughs of the character or whatnot, and this thing looks fantastic. All we know is that it's a great looking MMORPG and that it should be releasing sometime in 2020. So we'll have to look forward to see what happens there. I mean, could it be the MMORPG we've all been waiting for? The one that, you know, has no auto and it lets you grind and do all that fun stuff. In the gameplay footage, it did show a huge like beast like walking by your character, almost like what's that game? Shadow of the Colossus, where you would like take down these huge like behemoth monsters. It almost looks like it's something similar to that. So I'll keep an eye out for that one for sure. Yeah, it's very interesting.
This is the first I'm hearing of it, by the way. Like, you mentioning it right now is the first I've ever heard of it. Sounds like an interesting game, though.
Breaking news.
Something I'm looking forward to playing. Yeah, breaking news for me, at least. And then I think, you know, a lot of people were really looking forward to Slay the Spire. Or many people have been, you know, looking for alternatives on mobile to the PC game Slay the Spire. I covered Night of the Full Moon, which is, I heard, somewhat similar to Slay the Spire. At least some people are comparing those two games. But now Slay the Spire is releasing on mobile, and it's coming out in 2020, and it's one of, I think both you and me, like one of our most anticipated games of 2020 as well, in addition to all the other ones we mentioned in the last episode.
Yeah.
So are you excited for it?
Oh yeah. Like, so because I played a little bit of it on PC, right? It's on Steam, Slay the Spire, and it would make a perfect mobile game. The graphics are already have that kind of like mobile game ish look to it. It's a card based RPG type game with a story. I only played a little bit of it, but I'm super excited to have it on mobile because I think it would just make the perfect mobile experience. I'm assuming it's going to be a premium game, obviously, because it's kind of like a port from PC. But I'm excited for it nonetheless. I'll pay the however much, hopefully not too much, for it.
No, I think it's probably going to land somewhere between $5 and $10.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Have become almost the standard, I think, for these Steam games, you know, PC games that make it to mobile, except for the really big franchises, of course. And I'm talking not just like indie darlings like Slay the Spire, but like really big franchises. Of course, they are sometimes more expensive, but I think $7, $8 maybe would be my guess. On mobile.
Yeah, that sounds like a fair price point.
Yeah. Now, you brought up this really interesting question and what we eventually decided to turn into a topic, a new segment for this specific episode. You asked me in the pre-show, like, what actually drives you to play mobile games? So I'm curious to hear a bit more about like that topic and what you thought about that. And it was clear that you have thought about that for a bit.
Yeah, so over the past, I guess to preface this, over the past month, I haven't been very active on my YouTube channel. I currently was moving. I just bought a house, all that cool stuff. So I was playing a lot more mobile gaming in between, you know, before I go to sleep or something along those lines. And it got me thinking, like, what got me started playing mobile gaming in the first place? You know, what, I mean, because I don't know how it is for you, but I started playing mobile gaming before mobile gaming was like this big craze, right? When mobile gaming was looked down on as like, just the casual gamers or all just, you know, nothing's going to happen of it. And then here I am, I mean, almost 10 years later and mobile gaming is huge. I mean, look at the numbers that we've been looking at when it comes to revenue or whatnot and stuff like that. And I just started thinking, well, why did I start, you know, why did I start making this a passion or when did this become a passion? And it was really simple and it's the simplest thing. So basically, I used to work at a grocery store. This is probably 10 years ago. Yes, I used to say, would you like paper or plastic? And at this place of business, we had hour-long lunches. Now, hour-long lunches, I don't know if you guys had hour-long lunches. At my current job, we have 45 to 30-minute lunches, but an hour is a very long time. So I would finish my food within the first 30 minutes and just sit there. And I would sit there and maybe I'd watch TV if they had a TV in the break room, or maybe I'd browse on my phone, let's say. Well, when I got my iPhone, I was like, oh, cool, I can search on the internet, I can do all these cool things. Well, then that got boring. And then that was on the Play Store or the App Store, and I'm like, okay, let's download this, I don't know, Match 3 game or something along those lines. And then all of a sudden, I found myself, you know, every time I was on lunch, I would continue playing that certain game, or I would find a new game, or I'd continue this. Then I found myself going home and not turning on my PlayStation and continue playing that game. I mean, and then all of a sudden, what was it? Infinity Blade came out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great. It's like a console experience on my phone. And then I found myself playing that game. So what started out as, oh, I'm using this to kill time, ended up becoming, I'm doing this because it's fun, or I'm doing this because, you know, it's something to do as opposed, it's an alternative to console gaming or whatnot. Oh, I'm waiting in line, or oh, I'm on the toilet. That's where toilet time gaming came from. I mean, how many of us sit on the toilet? You don't have to answer this, Nimble. How many of us sit on the toilet and play on their phone? I mean, it's a thing. It happens. Is it sanitary? It is. Probably not.
Yeah.
No. but we do it. So it just started making me think like how it became such a big part of my life. And a lot of it just came down to the accessibility of it, the killing some time, or the even exercising your brain. I played a lot of brain games during that time. They had a lot of those type of things. And then I found myself, I used to have a DS. I would play that less and I would play, you know, on my phone more or something along those lines. And it really just came down to just something that was a fun alternative to do. The more I did it, the more it became a part of my life. It wasn't like something I spent hours upon hours doing, but the fact that it was accessible and there was quick bursts of play sessions, and it kind of like, you know, opened my mind to, oh, this is something that can be a thing. And then here we are 10 years later, let's say, and mobile gaming is just has blown up to the extent to where, I mean, you have big companies creating mobile games, you have PC ports coming to mobile, you have, you know, licensed movies or other products that are, you know, becoming into mobile games. And that was never a thing. I mean, we go back in time when mobile gaming first started, that was never a thing. None of these companies would have even thought for this to be a thing. So it was just kind of nice, I guess, yeah, for me to be like, oh, I started from the bottom, now I'm here type of scenario. So yeah, like it just started making me think, like, man, how did it become such a big part of my life? And it all started with an hour-long lunch.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah. You know what? Not exactly the same story for me, but I had a conversation just this Friday, so just 2 days ago. We're recording this on a Sunday evening, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about mobile games as I typically do, mm-hmm. and he was like, you know what, I tried mobile games, I just never really, I don't know, like I just never really got into them, right? And that spawned sort of that same type of thinking in my head, unrelated to you asking the question now. But I started thinking back, why was it that I actually got into mobile gaming and I now call myself a mobile gamer? Mm-hmm. I still have a PC. I still sometimes play a PC game, but it's very rarely. Like, we're talking, like, really rarely. Like, maybe once per month, maybe once every other month. Like, that's at the level I'm at right now, right? So I'm a mobile gamer now at this point. That's my entire life.
In self-proclaimed. Terms of gaming.
It didn't used to be like that, though. I played, as I kind of sort of briefly mentioned earlier, I played a lot of MMORPGs. And when I say a lot, I really mean a lot. Like, I spent thousands of hours. I've played over 1,000 hours of RuneScape. I've played multiple thousands of hours of a game called Silk Road Online, which was another free-to-play MMORPG that released around 2005, 2006. I played that a lot. I've played lots of shooters, Call of Duty, Battlefield. Going back even earlier to that, you know, earlier than that, I played some really old games like Jazz Jackrabbit. Just like, I played PC games, and that has been my whole life. I didn't have a console growing up. I had my, you know, my PC, or the PC that was at home, so actually my parents' PC, and I played video games on that. Then at some point, I got my first smartphone. And of course, that's a prerequisite, obviously, but I got that. And then being a gamer and being, you know, interested in what this new tech could do. And also, I was one of the first people, as far as I recall, I was sort of at least among the first 50%, let's put it like that. I wasn't the first one to get a smartphone, but I was, around the first 50% of sort of my friend group to get one. So I was really interested in being able to showcase what this smartphone that I had bought, what it could do, yeah. Right? And as you are, if you're a tech geek. And one of the things that helped me prove that would be mobile games, right? Because you could... You know, you had games on phones before smartphones, right? I don't know if you played games.
Snake. Yeah.
Exactly. No, yeah, Snake, but also more advanced games, actually, like prior to smartphones. But smartphones, of course, just completely changed everything because suddenly there were so many. They had one platform, well, two, I guess, you know, because Apple and then Google's Android system, but two platforms they could release on instead of being... you know, sort of fragmented across multiple different, like Nokia, Sony.
Different
Sony
devices, Ericsson. Yeah.
Yeah, different devices. And now they had these two platforms. And I actually just scrolled back through my purchase history on Google Play as you were talking. And I see the first game I bought was called The Moron Test.
I
bought it on October 28th, 2010. And this was when I got my first smartphone, and this was a perfect game because this was a game that was fun to play when you had friends sitting around you as well, because everyone could laugh when you made a mistake. It's one of those types of games where it's sort of a puzzle game, but the answer is obvious. You just have to sort of listen very carefully to the question being asked, and then it's easy to solve. But of course, that's why it's fun. You know, typically you'll get tricked into answering the wrong answer. And so that was fun. That was the first one I bought, and that was a very casual game. It was almost a party game, almost. Like, it was something that you could play socially. You could play it alone as well, but I played it, you know, during class in high school. Like, I showed it off to my friends. And then I started thinking, okay, so what can you actually do on your smartphone. And then I found Guitar Hero. Guitar Hero actually released, and this surprised me. I looked back now. Guitar Hero 6 and Guitar Hero 5 released around 2009-2010, on Android at least. And I bought that. That was a premium game. I paid $7 and $8 respectively for those two games. The experience wasn't as great as what I was hoping for, though, and that kind of... That was a bit disappointing for me because I paid what at the time was pretty expensive for a mobile game, at least. I mean, it still is. You know, that's the price of a premium mobile game, right? Like $7-$8. And of course, you have to imagine back then, mobile gaming wasn't this huge thing. So paying $7 or $8 for a mobile game wasn't something everyone, at least not in my friend group, like many people didn't play mobile games yet, and they certainly didn't want to spend money on it. It seemed almost stupid to do, right? So I played a bit of Guitar Hero. It didn't turn out to be an amazing experience, but I just sort of kept playing different games. The Impossible game was also fun. Like, it's quite literally an impossible game. And I also played one called Pocket Guard. That was fun as well. Then I got into Game Dev Story.
Game Dev Story.
Awesome game, right?
I played
right?
the heck out but, of that game, yeah.
Yeah, I played it as well. But, you know, it was still a lot of premium games that I played. Mm-hmm. And then I want to, you know, sort of scroll forward a bit here in time. Because then at some point, I actually also played GTA 3, Grand Theft Auto, and Peggle Knights, awesome games. But then at some point, I found this game in 2011. After having played premium mobile games for a year, I found this game called Defender. I don't know if you played Defender. It's a horribly monetized game, but of course I didn't know that back then. This was my first introduction to... I had no perception of like monetization on mobile. So I played this game and I started spending money on it, right? And I realized after a while, hey, wait, like I'm actually spending a lot more than I do on a premium game here. Like I see now... December 26th, I bought an in-app purchase costing $5. Then the same evening, another one at $5. Then just January 3rd, so just a few days later, I bought one for $10, another one for $8 the same evening again.
Wow.
And I was hooked. It hooked me. And then a bit after that, I was like, hey, what am I doing here? Like, I'm spending, you know, way more. I mean, it didn't get crazy. Like, this was sort of it, right? Like, I'd spent about $30 maybe in total on this game. So nothing too crazy. You know, I used to play PC. PC games where typically you would pay $60 for a PC game. So this still wasn't too crazy because I was enjoying the game, right? But it really showed me the power of monetization in free-to-play games. And it actually got me more interested in free-to-play games, believe it or not. Obviously, this wasn't... an amazing experience, but it wasn't a bad experience either. I mean, what eventually happened was that I realized that I had to keep spending money to progress in the game, and that was sort of a bad experience. I learned early on, but I was also intrigued about this idea of free games on mobile, and I learned that I don't actually have to pay to still enjoy those games, at least in some of the games. And that's, you know, that's really how it then went on. I almost stopped playing premium games after this point, with a few exceptions throughout the years. Back then, by the way, Angry Birds was a premium game as well.
Yeah, that's
the good
true.
Old days. I bought that. But to make what could turn into a very long story a bit shorter, I started playing free-to-play games, and I started playing more free-to-play games, and I started playing it more often than just, and this is kind of where our two stories start to sound a bit more like each other, because I started playing it more often than I did in the beginning. So after a few years, I want to say about around 2013 or so, I actually played less and less PC games. Mm-hmm. I had less and less time, so I stopped playing so many MMORPGs, just kind of out of quote-unquote necessity, right? If I had really focused on it, you know, I could probably find the time, but MMORPGs are very time-consuming, and I just didn't have 5 hours every evening anymore to play PC games. This was around the time also where I started... shortly after I started at university. So, you know, I had a lot more to see to in that regard. I started toying around with my own startup, like my first company, together with a friend of mine. I also got married around that time. So just lots of things going on that kind of meant that I didn't play as many PC games anymore. But I still considered myself a gamer, right? I just didn't have time to play those really huge hardcore PC games. So mobile was perfect for me, right? I really dove deep into first casual games on mobile, and then as the mobile space evolved over the years, you know, I moved further and further into larger, you know, mid-core and eventually hardcore games on mobile. When I say hardcore, I mean the big experiences, right? MMOs, yeah. MMORPGs, huge shooters on mobile, stuff like that, where you can really spend a lot of time, and they are somewhat comparable to their PC counterparts, not in the sense that they're necessarily as good. I mean, for a long time, mobile gaming, I'll admit, it was almost a bit like second grade, right? A second grade experience in comparison to the premium experience mm-hmm. you had on mobile. In many cases, at least that was my experience. However, the big difference was that I could play it anywhere. And I could typically play it for only 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. Whereas if I sat down to play a PC game, I almost felt like I had to play for an hour, 2 hours, maybe even 3 hours.
To make it worthwhile. It's almost like it's worthwhile. Yeah, it's almost like there's a correlation between the older we get and the more responsibilities we have, the more we become mobile gamers.
That's certainly it.
Yeah, you would think a mobile gaming thing would be like, oh, for a younger audience, which it is too. There is, you know, that younger audience that plays mobile gaming, especially nowadays. But I almost feel like, you know, the higher we get into adulthood, they would say like, oh, we're a gamer at heart, right? We were gamers when we were younger. We were a gamer at heart. And this is just an extension of that. That fits our daily lives. So, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, yeah.
And it also meant that, you know, as I was spending less and less money on PC games because I didn't mm-hmm. play them as much, I kind of started, and maybe this is also part of the reason why I sort of transitioned to free-to-play. Wait, let me take one step back. You have to understand, of course, that mobile underwent a huge change from being like almost entirely premium gaming to almost entirely at this point, almost entirely free-to-play gaming, right?
So,
of course, I experienced that as well. But and so just as more and more free-to-play games released, of course, I started playing those as well because more and more interesting types of games would become free-to-play and previously they would be premium games. But also on a more personal level, I didn't spend that much money on gaming anymore, so it was hard for me to justify, you know, why am I actually spending, and especially before I had a job, right, while I was still studying, why am I spending, you know, money on premium mobile games when a lot of the time I don't end up playing them that much. I guess it comes down to I didn't feel like I got enough value for my money. And with free-to-play games, I could play them for free. I can get some enjoyment out of them. And you know what? If I chose that after 10 hours or 15 hours, I didn't enjoy it anymore, or I had found that it became pay-to-win, I would just quit the game and move on to a new game.
Easy to stop playing.
Exactly. Easy mm-hmm. to stop playing. And you know what? I didn't feel bad about that. Like the way I always looked at that was like, hey, I got 10 good hours out of this. I had fun with this game for 10 hours and I didn't pay a dime mm-hmm. and this was a great experience. Now it's not so great anymore, but I had fun with it. And this, I think, is at the very core of why eventually I really wanted to start a YouTube channel. For many years, you know, since maybe 2013 or 14, I have always wanted to find a community for mobile gamers. I was huge on forums back in the day, like online forums, right? Bulletin boards, you know, where you could discuss like just gaming in general. You could discuss many topics, but I was huge on these, especially when I was into MMORPGs. I was posting very actively, like thousands of posts on many of these forums. So I was almost looking for, is there a forum for mobile gamers? And there just wasn't. You know, there just wasn't back in 2013 and 14. Reddit wasn't something I had gotten into at that point. And even if I had, I think both the Android gaming and the iOS gaming subreddits, they were very small back then. So I felt sort of, I didn't have anyone to really discuss mobile gaming with, no one online, and my real life friends, they didn't really play mobile games either. And so that's ultimately, like, I have had conversations with friends who I was trying to get into sort of a startup together with me where we were going to launch a forum or website all about mobile gaming, like for mobile gamers, right? And it was going to be this awesome place. But every time they were like, yeah, but who want to discuss mobile games, right?
And look at you now, right? That's all we do is discuss mobile games.
That's all we do now. And and it's just, and so ultimately I was like, hey, you know what? In 2016 or 17, I am just going to start a YouTube channel and I'm just going to sit here and talk about mobile gaming because this has grown to become a huge passion of mine, a huge hobby of mine. It actually grew to become more than PC gaming had even been for me, I want to say. I don't want it to sound like I'm exaggerating how this actually felt to me or what my experience of it was. But this is, you know, you asked the question, what drives me to play mobile games? And I think this is at the very core. I found that, okay, so there are those types of games that you can enjoy for 10 hours, 15 hours, and then they become trash. There are those games, mobile games, that you can enjoy for 50 hours or 100 hours or maybe even more, and they're still great. And then there are the games that you can play for 30 minutes and you realize they're just trash. Now,
yeah,
it's difficult to figure out which, you know, what sort of experience you're going to get from these games, because the reviews on the app stores aren't that great. So you know what? I want to, you know, thinking back to that community I always wanted to have, right? When I was trying to convince my friends to create a forum, I'm just going to create a YouTube channel. I'm just going to talk about mobile gaming and we'll see if someone cares, right? And it's nice to see that some people cared. And that was around the same time you started your channel as well. I didn't really know of you back then, but there aren't that many YouTubers who covers mobile games like we do, where we actually like look at new mobile gaming, new mobile games coming out. There aren't that many. We're a pretty small group of YouTubers, so eventually I found you as well. But this was my story, and this is what interests me, is finding those games, like helping identify those games that are actually worth playing for at least, you know, 10 hours. And sometimes people will tell me, hey, Nimblethor, awesome video, or like maybe they won't say that, but they'll say, awesome game, however, I've played this game for 20 hours and it's really become trash at this point. Why didn't you, like, why are you recommending this game?
I see that too a lot when on my comment section as well.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And this is my, I guess, like, I'm just... You know, we're over an hour into this podcast. Nobody's listening anymore. But if one person is listening,
this is our ramble.
Yeah, but I hope this one person who asks that those types of questions realizes that, to me, I find that to be a great game. You know, if I've had fun with the game, if I've genuinely had fun with the game for 10 hours, that to me that's a positive. Like, that's a good thing. But that's a different mindset, and I realize that, and it's a different mindset than some other people have, and that's okay, you know, but that's my view on it. But I don't know if it was actually, like, why did you start your channel? I've never asked you this, but, like, why did you actually start your YouTube channel?
It's kind of along the same thing that you were saying. You wanted to discuss mobile gaming, or you wanted to shed light on mobile gaming. Mine all really started, and I might have said this somewhere in the past if people don't know this, but mine really started was because it turned out, and we know this to this day, it's still true, I just couldn't trust the Google Play reviews. I would look in a game, I would look at screenshots, I would read the reviews, and everyone would praise how great this game is. I'm like, oh, cool, this game's going to be awesome. I would download it, and it wasn't what they said it would be. I mean, this wasn't 100% of the case. Of course, there's a lot of cases where a game is rated good, you play it, and that game is good, it deserves the rating. But I found myself falling into some of these traps, and I kept telling myself, I'm like, this game does this wrong, or this game isn't good because of this, but yet it said it was this in the, you know, in the reviews, let's say. And I found I ended up getting a mistrust, I guess, from that system. And that's kind of what drove me to create, you know, a channel based around mobile gaming, was, hey, here's what I think about this game. Now, you might not, of course, agree with me, because opinions are different. You know, you might really like it or you might hate this game, but here's an alternative opinion, or here's an alternative view from somebody about the game. And that way you just don't have to go off of what you're reading or seeing in screenshots. That was my main driving force, honestly, was just, I couldn't trust the reviews, I guess. I put it at that point. And I found myself searching for YouTube channels on games, and I didn't find that many. I mean, to this day, yes, there are a lot of us who cover mobile gaming. I mean, it's bigger than ever, I would say, you know, when it comes to YouTube and everything. But at the time, I mean, this was only, I want to say, 3-4 years ago when I first started the channel. You know, you didn't see it. So I'm like, oh, let me try to be the voice, or let me, you know, and I didn't expect anybody to listen or pay attention. Lo and behold, here we are. I mean, I think I'm at 5K finally, and you're almost reaching 7K subscribers. I mean, to us, we're small YouTubers. To us, that's amazing. Like, I never thought I would be reaching this many amount of people who would care to listen about what I say or ramble on about a game. But it really just started from that. Yeah, that whole, let me put my two cents out there and see what happens.
Like, not so much defining the ultimate truth about a game. Not so much, I mean, not that at all, you know, not trying to define, hey, this is exactly what you should think about the game, but just sort of saying something, putting something out there. I very much agree with that. So there we are. I guess that's it. We've said it all.
That's our ramble and our spiel.
It is indeed. Hopefully that was somewhat insightful to the few people
who are still here
this far into a podcast. So you know what? I think we should end it off here. I think that's enough for this episode. I certainly enjoyed the conversation. So thank you very much for that. And we hope that, you know, you let us know what you guys thought about the show as well. If you're watching on YouTube and you can leave a comment, please do so. And if you want more mobile gaming coverage, then, you know, remember that you can follow us both here on YouTube by simply doing a search for either Nimble Thor, then you'll find me, or a search for Tiny Little Games, then you'll find Tiny. Also, by the way, don't forget to check out the Mobile Gamer Discord that we've created a few months back. The links for that are in the description down below. It's being run by us two, and then also gamingonphone.com. So it's a pretty neat little place, a super casual place where we can just discuss mobile gaming, and we don't bite, so it's a friendly place. Come join us over there. We hope to see you there. And with that, we're going to end it here, I think. So hope that you've had a great time here today. Really appreciate if you actually listen till the end. And we will see you back again next month in an episode that goes up on Tiny Little Games channel. So until then, see you guys and have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.